Do you remember back in school when they said that the stone blocks cut by the ancient Egyptians were so precise that you couldn't fit a razor blade or even a human hair in between them? Well, this is what they meant. Look at that.
You know, as a matter of fact, I do remember the first time I heard that. It was in my fifth grade art class. So that would have been like 86 or 87. And my teacher, she had this thing where she would reward good behavior with a theme day. One time it was Egyptian theme day, and she taught us a bunch of stuff like that, and it blew my mind. And basically, it started this kind of lifelong obsession for me as far as like a hobby or a theme went. I mean, like by 1991, I was buying magazines like this, and those magazines have the term pyramidiad in one of them, and that was like, I love that term, and I own it to this day. I was on a waiting list at Hastings to get Fingerprints of the Gods when it was first released. I've been a pyramidiad all my adult life. And one thing I've noticed time and again is that people like to posit reasons for ancient high tech when simpler, more mundane explanations exist. And I'm going to use Jimmy Corsetti here as an example. And I know to a lot of the academics that are subscribed to my channel, watching two pyramidiots square off at each other has certain connotations. But bear with me, I promise that there's stuff in here for you guys as well. Hi, I'm Dan and welcome to Dunking.
The precision cut of these massive and extremely hard granite blocks is so unbelievably exact that it's difficult to even differentiate the two stones together. What you're seeing here are the enormous polygonal stone blocks that make up the Valley Temple, which is located in front of the Great Sphinx in Giza, Egypt.
This blew my mind as a kid and as a young adult, but eventually it led me to the realization that I mentioned earlier. There's lots of people that will posit ancient high technology when no reason for bringing it into this equation exists. There's this very simple explanation for why a stone can have very flat sides. Indeed, precision stone surfaces are made with a technique today that is ancient, that was used thousands of years ago. And that's a fact. Now, my position and Jimmy's position are both technically pseudo-archaeology. Neither one is the mainstream position. Although I will admit that my position is closer to the mainstream one than his is, but there's a reason for that. I don't posit ancient high technology when we have a more mundane explanation. If there's a simpler way of getting there, I'm going to use that one first. And in this case, we absolutely have that. And the reason that I think this is extremely important to bring up here is because when we bring mysteries to these scientists and we're like, hey man, check this thing out. When we bring them piles of this kind of stuff and they're like, oh, you just didn't do basic research before you brought this to me. It's not very long before we get the situation we have now where people like me are an anomaly because I talk to both sides. You guys all fight with each other.
The immense difficulty to construct a temple made out of polygonal shaped granite pieced together as if a tight-fitted puzzle is next-level difficulty.
Now, it is time-consuming, and it's certainly not easy, but there's a little clue here. Notice all the stone surfaces are relatively large, like you could get a man in there with a tool. Maybe that has something to do with how it was smoothed.
This particular block is closer to 50 tons in weight and brought from more than 500 miles away, which the experts theorize must have been carried by boat down the Nile River. However, the bizarre reality is that even the largest known ancient Egyptian boat ever found couldn't possibly sustain even a fraction of the weight of these stones.
Now, this line of reason is funny to me given the topic. So say, for example, that Jimmy is positing electric tools built the pyramids. So where are the electric tools? The same place as those bigger boats? And do you have a chain of development of those electric tools? Because we have a chain of development of those boats. So which one makes more sense? Electric tools just popped up out of nowhere? Or a foreman going to the Pharaoh and saying,
you're going to need a bigger boat.
Make no mistake, the mystery is real. Hence why there is a surging interest by millions of people from around the world into our lost ancient past.
And this is why I call myself a pyramidia. I completely agree. There are a lot of mysteries that science hasn't adequately explained yet in regards to the pyramids. And yeah, this stuff is getting a whole lot more popular. Speaking of, don't forget to check out my pyramid. Click the buttons down below. Tell me how much better you think my hair looked back in the 90s. It was glorious, by the way. And then do those other bell thing, all that stuff.
Many of these blocks are cut with rounded edges, thus creating a seam or groove of sorts between the blocks. But when you get up close, you can see that in the middle of these seams is a cut so perfect that they are completely flushed together as if they were laser cut. In fact, they almost look fused together. And you'll find awesome examples all throughout this magnificent structure.
So how did they make such perfectly flat lines on hard stones? Well, there's a technique called lapping, where you just take two of the same stone with relatively flat surfaces, put an abrasive material between them and some water, and then rub them back and forth. And you keep doing this for a while, and eventually you get perfectly flat surfaces. And I mean precision flat surfaces, as in, if you go to buy a precision granite countertop today, that is how it was made. Okay? Not just one for your kitchen, but precision, one that goes in a lab or in a machine shop, will be made not with a laser, not with a milling machine, but the same damn way that they made smooth stones thousands of years ago.
Sandstone block I just picked up from the ground around here. I'm using sandstone because I can demonstrate this in much shorter time than I would with granite. Very rough blocks. Just rub them together. I take a rough side, rub it again. Take another side and rub it again. Just grind it together. Very rough sides. Just keep grinding them, rubbing them together, and you will achieve precision flatness. And when I say precision flatness, I mean actual precision flatness, not the lost higher technology definition of precision flatness.
And this technique would produce the seamless joints that we see today. It's not hard to imagine them quarrying the stones and then doing whatever the hell you want to posit to get them to the site. Then once they're there, they're shaped into the basic shape that they need to be, and then another crew laps them. All four sides or all six sides that are getting joined, depending on where the block goes and all that, gets lapped. And then when those things go together, they're seamless. That's not hard to imagine, and I pretty much guarantee that that's how this had to have been done. Or ancient high tech, I'll go, that's a possibility, but I'm going to say that Occam's razor slightly favors my position here.
From a distance, you wouldn't think much of the methods used to cut these stones, but it's not until you get up close that you can appreciate the level of accuracy. It truly is next level. But you should know that this is not some one-off fluke example, as there are countless others found throughout the land of ancient Egypt. Even the ground itself has been lined with such unbelievably precise stone blocks that without careful inspection, you might not notice at all.
Whatever technique was used, it was ubiquitous. We see signs of it everywhere, just like Jimmy says. So if there was a tool that did it, you would think that we would see some of them laying around still somewhere, some sign of them somewhere, but we don't see any of these tools laying around at all. All we see are these big fields of rocks. It couldn't possibly be used to smooth another rock.
In examples like this, where we see the intersection of three stone blocks connecting at such a fine degree of accuracy, provides us with a wonderful perspective that illustrates just how remarkable the capabilities were for the people that made this.
It is visually impressive and time-consuming, but once you realize how they did it, it's not very remarkable at all.
Here are a few more examples of various Egyptian tooling, all of which are on display in the Cairo Museum in Egypt. I took these photos myself. All of these tools you're seeing are literally the only examples of the types of known tools utilized by the ancient Egyptians that have ever been found.
There's granite all over the site. So like this guy here, you could use granite to break granite with, and you could lap the granite into points, right? You could make like chisels with it. And I'm not saying you would use it as a chisel, but you know that they would make, like, those drill cores came from, like, copper tubes with an abrasive and liquid, right? And they just spin it in a circle, kind of like lapping, except for drilling with that same technology. So if they did that a bunch of places in a big piece of granite, and then they went and drove a bunch of granite wedges in there, and they had a crew all go 1, 2, 3, bam, and they all smacked those things at the same time, they could do more or less this 4,000 years ago, man. With the tools that they had available, that we know they had available, that are literally scattered all over the effing place.
That's right, and here's something else you need to know, is that out of the hundreds of thousands of hieroglyphics found throughout the land of ancient Egypt, not one single one of them shows anything about how the Egyptians cut or carved stone or constructed the pyramids. Literally zero whatsoever, and that's a verifiable fact, by the way. It's just that most people are completely surprised when they hear that for the first time. You see, what happened is we were shown animations like these as children in school, not realizing that this is nothing more than some theorized drawing created only recently for school textbooks. A bunch of primitive dudes wearing nothing but loincloths, using soft bronze chisels to shape the stones that make up the pyramids of Egypt.
Now this is true, there's a great gap of knowledge there, and it allows for a lot of speculation as to how they did things. But unless we start with the most reasonable and work our way up by a process of elimination, what we're doing is just fantasy. And don't get me wrong, it's way more fun to think about this world of lost ancient high tech mingled with the caveman type of people, like this weird juxtaposition a la Masters of the Universe. That's way more interesting to think about and to fantasize about than your pyramids being built with much more mundane means but trying to figure it out. However, if you're going to like hold something up to the scientific community or to the world at large and say, this is the answer, you really got to run through all these things. And I know that a lot of what you're doing in this video is just asking questions, but you're asking questions that the answers are really not very difficult to find. And then you're using that to imply that there was something else going on here, that there was some ancient high technology going on behind the curtains. Now, this is the kind of stuff that gives pseudoscience and pseudo-archaeology a bad name. Because, to be frank, anybody who engages in any of this stuff that's not, like, following all the steps in the scientific method, they are engaging in pseudo-archaeology. But there's a difference between being like, I think it might have been like this and not following all of those different little things and just spitballing bullshit out into the world, which is what you do when you're just like, well, I think it might have been ancient high tech. Let's look at it this way. Graham Hancock likes to use the quote, at least he used to back in the day, use the quote from Sherlock Holmes, when you've eliminated the improbable, when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever's left, however improbable, must be the truth. That requires actually eliminating the improbable, or the impossible, You can't just ignore them and be like, well, I don't think that they exist. You actually have to go through the process of eliminating them.
But here is the reality of what happened when people actually tested these primitive alleged methods in modern times.
After days of work, their copper chisels and stone pounders are barely making a dent. Brown is wearing down tools at an extraordinary rate. The copper chisel the ancient Egyptians would have used lasts only a few dozen strikes.
That was a notable Egyptologist testing stone hammers and bronze chisels on limestone in an attempt to recreate the Sphinx's nose. And you heard what they said. After a few days of work, and they barely made a dent, and the chisels themselves, after just a few dozen strikes, were worn out and useless. So, clearly not a feasible explanation, and what you didn't see is that later in this documentary, they completely gave up and resorted to using power saws to finish the task.
Now, I had to include this because showing Mark Leonard screw up is just beautiful. He's book smart, but anytime he tries to, crack the code of ancient Egyptian construction, it's just laughably ridiculous, and this is no exception. So, good job, Mark Leonard. Stone tools, infinitely easier and cheaper to produce, laying everywhere.
But that was bronze chisels on limestone. Wait until you see what happened when he tried it on granite.
When Roger tries chisels made from bronze, the results are disappointing.
As you can see, we're leaving a lot of metal and very little stone is flaking off.
Yeah, so no. Obviously, bronze chisels were not the methods of tools utilized by the Egyptians or anyone to cut and carve stone of any kind.
Yet again, watching Leonard eat it up is a thing of beauty. But just because he doesn't know what's going on doesn't mean that everybody's so clueless. So while Leonard might need to bust out the old power tools to get across the finish line, and maybe some other people might need some ancient high tech to get across the finish line, there's a lot of people that don't. They can figure this out without it.
Which is why it is so bizarre to see that this is still a primary explanation that is taught today. They even have it posted as descriptions within museums. And the reason for this is because the people writing ancient history books in modern times have concluded that these must be the types of tools that were used, since they are the only types of tools that have ever been found. So, case closed, mystery solved.
Now, the reason you still see those in museums and textbooks today is because how much slower those places are to react than the scientific community is. The scientific community, they're quick to react to new information compared to a textbook publisher. They're just going with whatever the prevailing wisdom is. They're not going to look in every little thing up unless they're, college level highbrow stuff. And the guy who's just doing the stupid museum cards, you think that's high on his list? Is like he's checking every day on the internet and making sure that all of his information's up to date? No. I guarantee you there's still some cards in this country that are going to stock stuff about Clovis First that ain't accurate no more. But nobody's bothered to change it, even though it's been like 20 years since they should have changed it or whatever. Now, amongst lay people, information can flow a lot quicker now. We've got stuff like Ancient Geometry Decoded or Scientists Against Myth that will do like physical tests and publish them on YouTube so the world can see. And so a lot of people realize now that like how things are done, and it's not the way that we thought for a long time. In other words, what I'm trying to tell you here is that copper tools are so 90s. Nobody says that anymore.
Bronze chisels aside, the more commonly accepted explanation for cutting the granite and limestone blocks involves copper saws. But again, these are the only examples of saws ever found from the ancient Egyptians. And not only that, the only depictions of the Egyptians using saws of any kind are these right here, which clearly shows them using small saws to cut wood for constructing furniture.
Again, this is just a weird argument to employ. So we have no pics of saws being used to cut really big stuff? So what means are you positing? Like sonic or electric or ohm the block into place? You have any hieroglyphs to support that? None at all? Well, I've got a hieroglyphs of a saw. You just showed them to me. So again, we can either just posit that this stuff exists or that this technology was upscaled. Which one makes more sense?
So watch what happens with that same Egyptologist, Mark Lehner, used a copper saw to demonstrate how it could have been used to cut granite blocks.
All right, we have a big block of granite here. So how's this copper gonna cut this granite?
Even with teeth, the copper alone is too soft.
We're going to put sand inside the groove and we're going to put this saw on top of the sand and then let the sand do the cutting.
The sawing went wonderful once we switched over to using water with the sand. As you can see here, we achieved this in just a few days.
4 millimeters an hour and just a few inches over a few days? Are you kidding me?
Lehner sucks with tools and he's going to get his sunburn out there proving himself wrong. But if they used a better abrasive like granite dust or emery, that's going to go a whole lot quicker and make a whole lot more sense. And it's actually something we find evidence for on a lot of the striations that we see around in drill cores and on the few blocks that we can find some evidence still in.
So besides the fact that no saw of this size was ever found, nor was there any saw of this size ever found to be depicted by the Egyptians, but we can clearly see that this method is so unbelievably slow that it couldn't possibly be a feasible explanation for how the Egyptians cut and carved the millions of stones that make up the pyramids. Because keep in mind that the Great Pyramid of Giza is made of some 2.3 million stone blocks and was said to be constructed over approximately 20 years. That means that they would have had to cut, carve, move in place at least one stone block every few minutes to achieve that timeline.
Now this is where me and Jimmy find serious common ground. I mean, this is one of the reasons I call myself a pyramidian. That 20 to 30 year timeline is absurd to me. If it was just a pile of rocks, maybe, but they got all kinds of goofy shit going on with tunnels and secret passages and shafts that end halfway through and just all kinds of goofy shit. There ain't no way that was built in 20 to 30 years. So 40, 60, 80, 100, that makes a whole lot more sense to me. I think that for a while there in the 4th Dynasty, Egypt just had this multi-generational thing going on that they were building 3 or 4 pyramids per generation. But anyway, I just call BS on that narrative and I move on. I just go right past it and go, okay, I'm going to look for ways that they moved and built these things and I'm not going to constrain myself to this 20 to 30 years. But Jimmy's using that right here to like hold up this idea of ancient high tech, but he also probably doesn't believe that 20 to 30 year timeline. So it's like, just if you think that this BS, dude, just ignore it. Don't use it as like a double argument, right? Don't on the one hand say that it's crap, but on the other hand use it as a way to posit ancient high tech. Just ignore it and move on.
But there's even more proof that these blocks were not cut with two guys holding on to some handheld saw. What makes this particular stone box so unique is that it's listed as being discarded by the Egyptians, as on the other side you see that they made a mistake in the cut and it went off center. But this in itself is evidence that the Egyptians were not using some unbelievably slow, primitive handheld saw, because If that was the case, they would have noticed and corrected their mistake almost immediately. The fact that it continued off-center for nearly another 3 feet strongly indicates that they were using a method that was far quicker and superior.
He finally made his position clear enough. It's not ancient power tools, but it's ancient power tools. Whatever it was cut through this stone so quick that when it made a mistake, it just right off the side, and they're like, oh man, I don't know what happened. But in reality, what happened was most likely a foreman or a spotter walked away from the job for a little bit. They're going to be using as much mechanical advantage as possible in order to drive that saw. So the guys pushing it are going to be like, look at this picture here. That's kind of the thing you're going to have. And you see that dude in the middle? His job is to spot. He's the lead on the crew. And if he goes and takes a leak, and the other guys are still cutting, and that thing skips the freaking line, and they just keep on cutting because they're not looking. Their job is to push that shit back and forth. So he goes and takes a leak, has two beers, stops at the bar, talks to his wife, and then shows back up 2 hours later and goes, oh, shit. That was your fault. You go get caned for that. I'm not taking the blame. That's probably what happened here. That might sound a little elaborate, and that might sound like I'm really off in the weeds speculating here. And technically, that would make it pseudo-archaeology. I'm really off in the weeds, and I don't have a whole lot to support what I just said. But I would guarantee you there's not very many archaeologists on the face of this planet that are going to consider some ancient power tool more likely than the situation that I just described to you.
I mean, isn't that interesting? Because between all the stone-cut blocks that make up the hundreds of pyramids, temples, various stone structures, flooring stones, columns, obelisks, statues, stone boxes and sarcophagi, and everything else, I wouldn't be surprised if the Egyptians cut at least 50 million stone blocks. Maybe even closer to 100 million, perhaps. I mean, who knows?
100 million blocks total? That sounds pretty impressive. Let's go with that. The dynastic Egyptians ruled for 3,700 years, and 100 million divided by 3,700 makes 27,027 blocks per year that needed to be placed. Still sounds pretty impressive, right? Divided by 365 days per year, that's 74 blocks a day. That's not so crazy, is it? Really? 74 blocks a day? That's really not that crazy at all, is it? That doesn't even sound like something that they would have to get ancient power tools to do. They could just do that with the techniques I've been describing so far, couldn't they?
Yet you will not find one single example in modern times of a fully cut stone block that was done with these primitive methods. Isn't that interesting? You have the Egyptians with tens of millions of stone blocks, maybe even 100 million. I'm just throwing out a number here, but tens of millions, no doubt. And yet we haven't done one in modern times.
Oh, come on. Come on. We have single people or small teams demonstrating proof of concept. What we lack is somebody with deep pockets, like financing this, bringing thousands of people in and saying, let's do this with those old school tools. Because for everybody else, there is no reason to do it with old school tools, man. Come on. Why would you use primitive tools when we have access to better ones, when you're working with that kind of crap? That doesn't even make any sense. That's like, it's like asking, well, how come nobody trades chickens for pigs anymore if trading chicken for pigs used to be a viable thing? How come soldiers no longer use bows and arrows if bows and arrows used to be viable? It's absurd.
It's clear that the ancient Egyptians had some sort of lost technology. And by technology, we shouldn't just think computers and lasers and anything else in our mind. Technology itself can be something quite simple. I mean, even a saddle on a horse is considered a technology. You need to look at this with open eyes and see that the mystery is here. When you see this stuff as an adult, you can see just how real the mystery is. But I'm going to wrap it up here.
I agree that we don't need to posit ancient high technology, but I would say that Jimmy very much comes across as positing ancient high technology in this video, especially when you get to the sarcophagus lid part. And it's very obvious he's implying that this thing just ripped right through it. He all but says power tool, right? But I think I would agree that we should look for more mundane explanations. I would agree with the sentiment there at the end, but he doesn't seem to come across that way throughout the entire video. My position is we should look for things that we know they already had and find different ways to apply them. For example, I have a video about how I think they aligned the Great Pyramid. I know that would be very difficult, as big as it is. And I know they didn't do it with ropes. I'm certain of that because you couldn't do it with ropes. So What's the way that they did it? Well, in my opinion, it might have involved mirrors, and it might have involved some concave mirrors, and that's where it takes a bit of a stretch. But there's none of this here that's outside of the realm of other ancient peoples figuring it out on their own. It doesn't require high technology, and it may not work. But it is the direction to take these things. All these avenues have to be exhausted before we even look at power tools. Since it's Veterans Day and Jimmy's a veteran, thanks for that, by the way, seriously, and I've served in the reserves anyway, I'll illustrate this with a military metaphor, this loss of knowledge. The United States had a lot of expert snipers in World War I, and in World War II there were a lot of off-the-book sniper schools all over Europe, all right? All over Europe, mostly a few in Asia, but almost all over Europe there were sniper schools set up. So at the end of the war, these are one of the first things cut because there's a lot of bloated budgets, and these weren't even on the books. So you fast forward to Vietnam, and the commanders on the ground are screaming for trained snipers. So when they reopened the sniper school, guess what they had to go with to start their stuff off again? They didn't have World War II knowledge anymore. It was all lost. They had to go World War I knowledge and Olympic marksmanship shit. That's what they went with, even though the World War II knowledge was just 30 years ago, man, 25 years ago, but it was gone just that fast. So there are things that are very simple that can be lost with the techniques that can be lost with using the tools. I mean, they had better tools 25 years later, right? But their techniques were still worse, and they still had worse results without learning, relearning, rediscovering these old techniques. And that's where we should be as pseudo-archaeologists, not looking for magical techniques, which I know you come across saying at the end that that's not what you're doing, but throughout the entire video, the marveling at a lot of these things comes across very much as like ancient high technology is the key. You know, I've watched Jimmy for years. A lot of the time when I was too busy raising my son to like actually look into stuff, it was just a good way to get a quick Atlantis fix. And even when I thought he took things too far, like this time here, I still enjoy watching his content. So, you know, I know his following's a lot bigger than mine, but I feel I need to point out because of the content or the comments I've been seeing lately, please do not go yelling at him. If you got to talk crap about him, do it in the comments here, not on one of his videos. Now, for those of you who do enjoy these kinds of even-keeled takes on this stuff, I make a lot of content like this, and there's a whole bunch of it, some on the screen probably right now. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.